France bans the names steak, bacon, sausage, and escalope labels from vegetarian products.
The winner of the Great British Menu TV show's Fish Dish is not fish, it's vegan!
And Peter have gone shopping for some racing pigeons, and they've only gone and bought it off King Charles III.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel. I am Dominic.
And I'm Anthony, and this is episode 45 of Vegan Week. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in, whether it's your first time or your 45th time. And hello, Dominic, joining us for the second time in the Enough of the Falafel virtual studio. How exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. I had a brilliant time when I was last here. So cheers for having me back. It's really cool.
Not at all. It takes a lot to put us off someone. So, you know, you've got more work to do. Before we get too deep into the show, we should thank our sponsors too, the brilliant Fire and Flow Coffee, 100% vegan company. They do specialty coffee and tea and accessories. Their webshop's got it all. Fireandflowcoffee.co.uk is where you can go perusing. And listeners, if you enter the code FALAFEL10, that's falafel and then 10, at the checkout, you'll get 10% off your order just because they love Enough of the Falafel listeners. How exciting.
How good is that? Well, that's enough of the falafel. Let's hear what's been going on in this week's news. So we have got about a dozen or so stories. We're going to run through them and break them down a bit, give you a bit of detail about what's happening in the vegan world. So, Ant, what have you got for us?
Well, as always, we're going to start off with any news that we found that is affecting animals right now. First up, this one's from the BBC, of all places, though it's been widely reported. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, otherwise known as PETA, they have been buying some racing pigeons. Now, it doesn't sound like the kind of thing that they would do. Obviously, they're not going to be racing them. They have rescued them, quote, from a, quote, charity auction. This is going to be the story I'm talking about later, so we'll get more into it. But basically, they've rescued three pigeons from the pigeon racing industry, and they used to belong to King Charles III. Presumably, they've chosen those ones because it gives them a good bit of press release. They've also released a lot of press about the awful pigeon racing industry. But like I say, we're going to come back to this story in a bit. But three pigeons have been rehomed from the King's estate in Sandringham. Also, a bit of follow-up to a story that we covered last week. So this is the live animal carrier ship Al Kuwait that had transported 19,000 animals from Brazil to Iraq. Listeners to last week's show will remember it had sparked outrage. It docked in Cape Town, South Africa, and basically everyone in Cape Town was going, what on earth is this smell? This is awful. They tracked it back to this ship. It's now been revealed this week that upon inspection, three animals have been found dead on the ship and many covered in their own mess. Really, really nasty stuff. So not the best follow-up, but I thought it'd be good to keep people up to date with that one.
Thank you, Ant. So we've got some business news. France is definitely not the only place that isn't certain whether words like sausage and bacon should only be used for meat. But what has happened in France is there is a banning of the terms being used for vegetarian and vegan products. It is being decreed that only meat products have the right to use the word sausage, which perhaps needless to say, I have strong opinions about. So yeah, that's going on in France. Globally, the plant-based company Beyond Meat have had their shares go up by 45%. Now, I don't know much about stocks and shares. When I saw that headline, I thought that was a good thing. I was like, oh, so they're worth more. Is that good? Apparently, they haven't been selling as well. So they're going to raise their prices of their products, which is a bit of a shame because Beyond Meat are, in my subjective view, one of the nicer burgers out there. But I don't know. I am one of those old school vegans that likes cooking stuff from scratch with tomatoes and mixed vegetables. But that is a luxury, isn't it? That's a privilege that I working from home have that not everyone has. So I do think Beyond Meat do brilliant stuff. And I hope that they have a long, long life. Finally, in the business news, I know very, very little about like the cosmetics, makeup, perfume, that kind of thing. But there is a supplier of specialty chemicals now. Ant, I don't know how your pronunciation of beauty products is. I think they're called Evernique, to kind of rhyme with my name, Dominic.
That's what they were going for.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they wanted all along. They were like, we need to get it rhyming with that famous vegan poet, Dominic Berry.
Definitely. So they've got a new vegan collagen for their beauty and personal care market. Because, you know, so often we've got, you know, really horrible animal byproducts. Not that any animal byproducts aren't horrible, but, you know, bones and hooves and, you know, stuff from fish aren't uncommon in beauty products. So it's really lovely to hear that this new beauty line is being launched.
Absolutely. On to lifestyle news now then. Vegan cheese manufacturers have been in the news this week, accused of dismissing health warnings about their product. What could it be? Well, a new organisation I've never heard of called Action on Salt. There's an interesting gig. They have urged the government to act because they are saying that plant-based cheese is almost 10 whole percent saltier than regular cheddar and equally high in saturated fat, despite the fact that it's got this, quote, health halo effect perceived on it. Now, I mean, I'm not going to go into this much, but I mean, 10% is not much. Yeah, it's slightly more salt. Fine. Okay. Good that we know that.
I guess part of the, you know, balanced diet argument. So I share my home with a wonderful woman called Jess, who is vegan, and she has vegan cheese and everything. But she makes her own salads, her own soup. So for her, she's so nutritionally aware, that's like a little bit of naughtiness. If you're having it on a pizza and a burger and, you know, like real junk food, then I guess it matters more how much salt is in your vegan cheese.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, the Action on Salt lobby has been pushing that this week, so we probably ought to report it too. Moving on, there's a new vegan documentary coming into cinemas on April the 19th, but it's been sort of launched this week. That's when it's going into cinemas in UK and Ireland, by the way. It's called I Could Never Go Vegan. Really like the name. It's produced by Alicia Silverstone.
Hooray!
And the film explores various common arguments against veganism, why those arguments exist, and whether they're in fact justified. And some of the perceived issues explored includes fitness, aging, ethics, and the environment. So that's definitely one to check out next month. Another film that has been released already on Amazon Prime Video is called Poacher, and as the name suggests, ivory poaching, or rather fighting ivory poaching, is the central theme. In it's a crime drama series, this one. It's about a group of forest agents who try to track down the biggest elephant ivory poachers in the history of India. So if you've got your Amazon Prime, do check that one out. Might have to take out another trial, so long as I remember to cancel it after 7 days. And finally, a story Dominic's going to talk about a bit later. Great British Menu fans have raged. The show has lost its way after a chef won a fish challenge with a vegan dish. But more on that one later.
Yeah. So on to campaigns. Veganuary 2024 had estimated 25 million people adopted a plant-based diet for the month of January, which is wonderful. It really fills my heart with joy every year when all the Veganuary promotion goes out on social media. And brilliant that it's been really popular. What a positive story to start on. More potential positivity from overseas. South Korea's main opposition party will revise the civil law to define animals as living creatures, because not all countries do that. Animals are often seen as property. And to think that we're still at that stage to see animals recognized as living creatures, as sentient, you know, that's awful that that's still being fought for, but excellent that it is at least being fought for.
Yeah.
Over to Bangladesh. Bangladesh's critically endangered wild elephants have received a court order banning their adoption and protecting them from exploitation. Animal rights groups have welcomed the High Court suspension of all licenses so young Asian elephants can no longer be captured and taken into captivity.
Fantastic news. Now, as we've said, we've not got time to go into every story into a lot of detail, but we are going to pick out some of our favourites. If there's one that we don't talk about anymore in the show, fear not, just look at your show notes and there will be a link to where we got the story from. So if you want to read up some more, that will be where you can find it. But like I say, we have got a bit of time to chew the fat on a few more. So Dom, you get the ball rolling. What's your pick of the news?
Yeah. Thanks, Ant. Thanks. Well, you know, I'm one of those really like pretentious folks who are like, oh, television. I don't have a television, actually, which sounds like I'm so older than now. I mean, I'm a really big video gamer. There's no like hierarchy there. I'm at home playing Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, I'm not doing anything, you know, better than TV. But I do like it when something positive is represented on TV. And, you know, there have been a lot of documentaries about veganism. And in the reality TV world, the Great British Menu has had a contestant called Kirk, who has won with a celebration of table tennis. Honestly, Anne, it's like when you go to these country pubs and you get like your food on like a bit of slate, you know, a bit of roof or something like that. It's like, it's not like, you know, knife, fork and plate. It's like set out like a table tennis court, and it's all done as a seafood dish. All the other contestants used fish, but he went with seaweed and a parsley porridge and set it all out on table tennis like paddles.
Yeah,
like
I've got it in front of me. It looks outstanding, doesn't it? Top marks for presentation.
Yeah, really, really good. So I'm a big fan. I'm not a big fan. Like I watched the clip from the show, the way they do the "and our opinion is the Jew, Kirk." Like, they draw it out so much. Like, you know, like really, you know, getting every ounce of drama. Just say, yeah, we liked it. Well done, Kirk. That's good. That is, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's a sidetrack, but like any kind of show that kind of imposes that sort of power over judgment on somebody's artistic creation. Because cooking is art, isn't it? You know, it's not an objective that's good. Like, some people are going to like things and some aren't. Yeah, just imposing that on people and, yeah, adding the drama. I know it makes good telly, but gosh, it grates me. But good on him for doing a vegan dish. I don't think he's vegan himself, is he? The chef who's done that.
I don't know. I was looking up that and couldn't find out. You say like it makes good telly. Does it? Is it, you know, one of my rants about, you know, the way we're all conditioned to multitask. I think sometimes they draw out these things, not just for the dramatic value, but because most people are on their phones at the same time as watching the show. So they kind of do it at that pace so that someone who's only semi-paying attention can still follow what's going on. But yeah, I thought, you know, it looked really creative, really beautiful. And they seemed really genuine in their celebration of how tasty it was. The expressions on the people who were the other contestants who'd made the fish dishes, they weren't pleasant expressions. They didn't look cheerful about it.
Yeah. I've just looked it up and the name of the chef is Kirk Hayworth, and a story I've picked up here on UKNewsYahoo.com says that he is a plant-based chef and is preparing to open his own plant-based fine dining restaurant called Plates, nice name, in London this spring. So there we are.
That's so wonderful, Anne. That's so wonderful. I live in Manchester and we have a lot of different independent businesses, and we've had like a real run of new vegan places open, and some of them have closed down quite quickly, like with big, you know, like they've been really like big independent places. And people always leap to the conclusion, well, it's because it's vegan, isn't it? It's like, you don't know anything about what's going on behind the scenes with the business. There could be any number of reasons that are unconnected to the fact that it's vegan. My favourite curry place is all vegan here in Manchester. I recommended it to you, Anthony.
You did. And me and my partner went. It was fabulous. It was great.
It is fabulous. Can I give their name a shout out?
Yeah,
Little Aladdin's on High Street in Manchester. They don't know I'm giving them a shout out, but I want to, because I'm probably their best customer. I'm in all the time. And they're evidence that an all vegan business, I'm in there sometimes when people say, like, oh, you know, do you have chicken? And he's like, no. And they walk out. And that's okay. That's a minority of people. A vegan restaurant can exist. They do exist. But people are just really keen to, like, leap on the, it's because it's vegan that it's not worked out. So I really hope with Kirk, that's wonderful to hear. And what good publicity to get this on mainstream TV. Let's hope that his restaurant does really, really well with its plant-based menu.
Absolutely. And I mean, I've got to say, I don't watch the Great British Menu, but my perception of cooking programs is that they do take themselves quite seriously. I'm talking about the judges here. And my point is, they're not going to say something tastes good. They're not going to make something win for some kind of woke agenda or anything like that, or positive discrimination. They're only going to say his stuff wins if it tastes the best. And that, I mean, we don't need persuading that plant-based food can be as good, or if not better, than carnist food. But actually, this is, I would say, is sort of quantifiable as it gets, that actually it can be just as good. You know, it can taste really nice. That's what we need to hear, isn't it? And I don't think any cooking show or baking show would do that just to satisfy a sort of equal opportunities agenda. Like, it won because it's the best.
Yeah, totally. And hooray for Kirk. Hooray. Good news indeed. So that was my pick, Ant. That's what I wanted to talk about. You did say, but I've forgotten, which was your pick of the news stories, Ant?
Well, I'm not much of a traditionalist, but I'm going for our BBC story, not because it's from the BBC, about the King's Racing Pigeons being bought by animal welfare group PETA. Now, gosh, you know, I read into this, and I've got to say, I got a bit cross with PETA. And, you know, anyone who's advocating for animals, broadly speaking, has got my support. There's obviously some things you could do in the name of veganism that I wouldn't necessarily be behind. But I think, broadly speaking, PETA do a good job. But I just wasn't sure about this one. Great that they've drawn attention to racing pigeons. A lot of people won't know that that's an industry and that goes on. I went on to the British Homing World Show of the Year. Homing as in homing pigeons. British Homing World Show of the Year 2024. I went onto their website. It's a massive deal. It's a massive room filled with cages, filled with pigeons. Like, this is an industry, and these poor birds are suffering. So great that PETA are drawing attention to it. However, I'm really not down with the way that they've done it, I have to say. And it depends on what news source you look at in terms of how it's been put. The BBC article said, they bought these three racing pigeons that used to belong to King Charles. They've bought them at a charity auction. And I thought, oh, okay, fine. The money's going to charity. Okay, you could argue the animals are being commodified because money's changing hands, but the money's going to charity. Fair enough. I looked into it on PETA's website. And interestingly, PETA's press release says, the opening line of it, PETA has rescued three pigeons who were bred for racing and kept in King Charles's loft at Sandringham before being auctioned off at the British Homing World Show of the Year. So actually, this quote charity auction is actually the British Homing Pigeon World Show of the Year. Presumably, they're a registered charity. So actually, I know it's only three pigeons and it's probably not going to cost that much, but PETA are giving money to a homing pigeon organization. And I get that they've got to put their press out there somehow, and they've got to raise awareness. They've got a headline here that's been reported on the BBC and a number of other places. So that's great. But I don't know how I feel about the fact that they, in a small way, subsidizing the homing pigeon industry by doing it. Do you think I'm going a bit over the top there, Dominic?
I don't think you're going over the top. Like, I don't know if I'm as well informed on PETA as I could be before passing my view. I mean, they're definitely a group that's attracted a lot of criticism for various things they've done. And, you know, I'm sure anyone working for any group, you know, goes in with strong beliefs and the view they're doing really good things. There's been other articles about sexism, about like they've done a lot of stuff that doesn't portray women in great light in their sort of views of you know, campaigning. And I might be wrong. I want to look this up before I say, but there was something about autism as well, about them saying,
oh really,
yeah, like, you know, the dairy milk gives you autism.
Oh,
that was
golly.
A PETA campaign, you know, the heart of their thing being like that, their presumptive belief that autism is bad, which of course is a belief, you know, not everyone would go, I don't consider autism a bad thing. No. You know, I think PETA do a lot for publicity, and that's not always a good thing.
Yeah,
that's
I think, like, I really don't like cancel culture. I don't like it as a concept. And I think what we've got to be mindful of is that PETA do such a lot of campaigning. They do so many press releases, headlines, so much direct action, things like that. Like, if you're going to do 1,000 actions in a year, then yeah, you're probably going to be able to pick out 2 or 3 that you could look at and go, ooh, not sure about that, mate. I think you might have crossed a line there. And I don't think that should necessarily cancel out them as an organization. I just wonder in this instance whether, you know, King Charles III's homing pigeons have gone up for auction. They've thought, oh gosh, if we could save these, then that's a really great headline, a really great story. And actually, whether maybe, of course we're speculating, but maybe they've got so overexcited at that PR opportunity, they've kind of, in my opinion anyway, crossed a bit of a moral line in that they are giving money to the Homing Pigeon Association in doing so.
Sure.
And I don't think the means justify the end in that instance. I didn't feel 100% comfortable with that. But at the same time, they've drawn attention to a horrible industry, which I'd not really focused on. Like, I've been vegan 12, 13 years. I don't think in that time I've ever really consciously thought about that. I was aware of it as an industry, just vaguely. You see it sort of referenced in films sometimes, don't you? And things like that. But
I'm not an expert on homing pigeons. And, you know, I have people in my life who really like the horse racing, and I do feel quite informed on horse racing. And, you know, when they just see it as a bit of fun and it's all joyful, you know, it takes a lot of consideration on my part. How am I going to choose to enter into this social interaction, which they're completely unaware could be the result of any controversy or passionate opinion? Or so, yeah, I don't know a lot about racing pigeons. I take the general stance that you know, animals aren't ours to like use sport and for our you know, sort of entertainment in that manner. What you said before about the cancel culture thing, I really agree. I think that if someone does something wrong, it doesn't necessarily discredit every other thing that they've done. And that is very much a sign of the times, that there's so much debate about that. I guess the question, and I do not have the answers to this, the question is, how many times have PETA had campaigns which haven't been ethically great campaigns? And is it 2 or 3 times, or is it a larger number? And at what point is it like you've misstepped so many times that maybe that the organization needs to be questioned?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's an important question for us to ask ourselves, isn't it? You know, and I think it's hard work being vegan and being compassionate and having it, you know, being up on the moral high ground. But like, we've got to question things all the time, haven't we? And I would put it out there that it's not good enough to just say, oh, I've got all the answers now, I don't need to re-examine things. And
yeah, for sure. So I mentioned before my great love of video games. I've bought a brilliant video game called Gibbon. I absolutely love it. It's quite a recent game and it's relatively mellow. You swing amongst the trees, do various backflips and try not to fall over. And you know, there's some peril in it, like, you know, poachers chase you. Your homes are often set on fire for deforestation. Wow. There's palm tree plantations happening. And the game is really beautifully made, full of joy, full of celebration. But it comes with a lot of facts about tourism, apes being captured for selfies for social media, how destructive and awful this is, parents being killed and you know, the evils of palm oil. So the reason I bring this up is I've been vegan for 16 years now, but I've never avoided palm oil until like the last month. And this video game really made me look at my own lack of awareness of palm oil. So I made the choice. I went through various things and I saw that there were certain things that I'd been buying that had palm oil. So my own little gesture is that I now don't get those things anymore. So in terms of cancel culture, I don't think anyone should have been like, oh my word, that vegan poet, what a hypocrite. Nothing he says is of any worth because he's been having palm oil for years. I found something out. I was, you know, what a brilliant video game.
Yeah, so sounds amazing.
In a really entertaining way. I recommend it so highly. And it changed me. It changed the actions that I'm taking. And that's a good thing. So I think it really boils down to how open people and how open organizations are to receiving feedback. Again, to go back to how Peter have used women in ways that some have seen as like sexually exploitative, in, you know, like, oh, look at this sort of titillation here. Look at this woman, this like, oh, she'd rather be naked than wear fur and that sort of thing. And I think Peter have done it on a number of occasions.
Yeah.
That's my belief why people are so frustrated, because they've not been open to being like, oh, maybe like that's not landed well.
Yeah.
You know,
I would say that has been my sort of background context awareness of Peter too. Having been researching for the show over the last 6 to 12 months, I've seen less of that. However, that might just be what I'm searching for. That might be a fluke. And like you say, how many times do you need to do this? Are we saying it's okay to be outrageously sexist 5 times a year? Like, it's, you know, it's still not okay, is it? So yeah, it's. I just thought it was an interesting story in terms of us examining to what degree do the means justify the ends. Yes, definitely draw our attention to pigeon racing. Definitely, that needs to be done. All in animal exploitation needs to be highlighted. But do the means justify the ends? If we're going to, you know, be paying money for these things, you talked about horse racing, Dominic. Like, if a stable was to be paid to rescue 3 horses that previously they were, in my mind anyway, exploiting for that industry, that still wouldn't sit comfortably. Great for those 3 horses, of course, but you're still financially propping up that institution. I'm not sure about that. But yeah, interesting. We should probably move on, shouldn't we? But great comment.
One final please thing do, I'll yeah. say, just someone has a controversial view doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you know, that the ultimate goal is for one side to be right and the other to be wrong. I know that's not what you're saying, Ant, yeah. But like, you know, Peter have come under a lot of criticism because there's certain things, like, you know, they say as an absolute that breeders of animals are wrong. Mm. And, you know, I've got friends, I've got people who don't think breeders of animals is wrong. They, you know, I do, you know, like when you know, it's a big and complicated matter, and the whole concept of breeds, dog breeds, cat breeds, you know, so that's one area where people criticize Peter and like, oh, you know, they're being really out of line with their inflexibility. But that's an example of where my own views correlate with what I'm aware of Peter saying. So yeah, it isn't always or one way or the other.
Absolutely.
So I, those of you who've listened to the show before know that I am a poet, and as a poet, words matter to me. What we're doing right now is quite unusual, really, that I'm just like waffling on off the top of my head and chatting about something like Peter, which is a really important thing, without having scripted it loads in advance. And that's what a poem is. It's using like the best language that you can possibly have, and having spent time sculpting and crafting it. So I am definitely a person who think that words matter. That said, I'm all right with words meaning more than one thing. Nuance. You know, that's okay for words to have more than one meaning, such as sausage meaning meat or non-meat. Like, I'm down with that. I'm down with that. And the policy that has happened in France this week is not down with that. Is not down with that. I would say, Ant, I would say that sausage is a shape. That's what
yes,
I'll say.
I think so.
What would you say, Ant?
I definitely would. And that, I mean, when stories like this come up, there's always so many examples that people bring out and kind of point out contradictions. It's not just a vegan discussion, is it? I mean, if you think of words like coconut milk, peanut butter, Easter eggs, things like this, they're all examples of words being used to mean different things, and people are not buying an Easter egg in the shop at this time of year, cracking it open over a frying pan ready to make an omelette and going, hang on a minute, this isn't what I was expecting. So it's clearly a load of fear mongering from various countries, different meat lobbies. I mean, if it's okay, Dominic, I'll just outline a few of the sort of main facts of the story, just so listeners have got a bit more insight into this. So the French Prime Minister, Gabriel Attal, who, by the way, you need to Google this guy. He's 34. He looks about 12. I can't believe he's a prime minister of a European country. Very handsome man as well. Anyway, that's a sidetrack. He announced on X on Tuesday, the 27th of Feb, that it was a request from our farmers, the decree banning the names steak, escalop or ham for plant-based products has been published today. So just for context, for anyone who's sort of not aware of the context in France at the minute, a lot of farmers protests, agricultural crisis, it's been dubbed. So it seems like this decree, which is part of a new French sovereignty plan for livestock farming, it seems to be a little way of sweetening up farmers who are not very happy with the French government at the moment. This sovereignty plan includes a 400 million euro injection, I guess, in aid as a long-standing demand from people in the sector. Failure to comply with this law, so if you're a company, a vegan company, and you now put this is a vegan sausage on your packet, you can be fined 7,500 euros, which for a big company is not actually that much of a fine, but actually that is against the law, so you'd still have to change your packet too, as well as the fine. And individuals, yeah. Says individuals can be fined 1,500 euros. I'm not sure what individual is that, like an individual going around the supermarket with a marker pen. I'm not sure how that works. Some interesting points to note: that certain food products will be able to continue using the terms even though they contain plant proteins themselves. So if you think of a sausage, it's not always 100% meat. There might actually be some bits in there to kind of help keep its structure or the casing or whatever. So they've released these kind of like small margins that, oh, if you've got a paupiette, I don't know what that is actually, but you're allowed 6% plant protein in there, as well as the sort of animal products. So they've got these little guidelines too. The actual words, just to give the full list: fillet, sirloin, rump steak, escalop, ham, flank and chuck. They're the new banned words. Not allowed to put those on plant-based products. And interestingly, it doesn't apply to stuff that's been made in another country. And I don't know about you, Dominic, but that seemed like a massive loophole to me, in that if they're saying it's because of confusion. So they're saying people are getting confused. They're going to the shop, they're trying to buy a sausage. This says vegan sausage and people are buying it. Well, if this law only applies to French products, then presumably a German or a British company can put vegan sausage written in French on a packet, sell it in a French supermarket, if it's about confusion, that's still going to confuse people, isn't it? It's to me, it just smells like a thing where they're trying to just sweeten up their farmers who are very cross with them at the moment. That seems to be...
Yeah, it does sound, doesn't it? Like there's other motivations for doing it. So I remember being in my 20s and discovering vegan cheese like nearly two decades ago. We've spoken a little bit about vegan cheese already, about, you know, there's such a wide variety of vegan cheese, and it's a subjective take whether it's tasty, not tasty, prefer this company to that company. I remember in my 20s when I was I had a different mindset, and I was like, why call it cheese, like, you know, I'd only recently given up dairy cheese, and vegan cheese 20 years ago was really different to what we've got now. It was less like dairy cheese. So I was like, call it something different, make up a new word, call it flubbly lip.
Well, there was a period where vegans were calling it Gary. Do you remember that? About like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think it was like someone, was there maybe like a Sainsbury's executive that was saying, we shouldn't be calling it cheese. You may as well just call it Gary. And then loads of vegans were like, okay, fine, we'll just call it Gary then. And people were actually calling it Gary. I don't know whether it ever made it onto a packet. But that, like you say, it's just a word. It didn't matter. Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, I think it did make it on some packets. I'd completely forgotten that. And I loved that. I was well behind the Gary thing. Well,
the Gary movement.
Yeah. I think young Dominic had a point that if you give something a new name, then that's inventive and joyful and... You can, you know, that it leads to less disfavorable or any kind of comparison, really. But the reality is that people are working long hours. They're tired. They want to just quickly go into a supermarket. And they, what is this? Flubbly dabbly do? What is this? I'm being really hippy dippy here. But when things are called like, this is not bacon and all things like that, that's like a way of getting around it, isn't it? But I always think, and this is really unimportant, my view here, really unimportant, but I think it's a bit of a shame to use a negative. I think using a negative, this is not bacon, has connotations, in my view, of not as good.
Yes.
You know, that's how I read it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think what we're seeing here is that there are groups of people, whether they're in industry or whether they are governments or whether they are just individuals, who are challenged by the idea of veganism, of not consuming animal products. They're maybe feeling a bit triggered. They're feeling defensive that we're saying they're doing something wrong or whatever. And so whatever we do, whatever pictures, whatever names, however we do things, people are going to give it a bit of backlash and give it a bit of, oh, you can't do that. You know, tofu is a product that's been around for thousands of years. It's got its own name. It's its own thing. It's not trying to pretend to be anything else. But lots of people go, oh, tofu, bloody tofu. So in a sense, I kind of think we can't win. And also, well, let's not try to then. I kind of feel like if companies a country is saying you can't use that word, just say, all right, then, fine, we won't, but we're going to keep making these products. And unless someone is literally saying you're not allowed to make something that at all tastes of sausage, I think really the people for whom this is important are going to seek it out. And I take your point about, you know, if it's busy at the end of the day, you just want to be directed to the right thing. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking, I wonder whether it kind of affects people who are transitioning over a bit more, because when you're seasoned vegans like you and I, Dominic, like, we know where to go in the supermarket. We know what things are going to look like we might recognize some brands. So even if they change the name, we'll just be like, oh, it's Fry's Foods. I know that Fry's Foods are vegan. That's fine. Whereas if you're new to the scene, being pointed out to, right, this thing here, this is sausage that you know, but it's a vegan version and you're trying to eat vegan things now, so use that. So I think that would be the main group of people missing out. But I just don't know whether it's a hill worth dying on for us as a movement. I think it's an attempt from industries to make things disruptive for us. And I think the kind of like if someone's bullying you, the best thing to do is, you know, just show you're not bothered. And I think yeah. It's the same thing.
I made this point before when we were talking about Beyond Burgers and like their shares changing and, you know, decline. I acknowledged my privilege that my lifestyle, I am able to do a lot of cooking, and I've got friends whose employment demands ridiculously long hours. So I'm calling for revolution. I'm calling for revolution. I'm calling for the deglamorizing of the grind, this unquestioning positivity that's applied to hard work. Oh, he's a good hard working lad. Or she always works hard. This idea that hard work is good and that can't be challenged. And the idea that if you're not grinding away and the capitalist treadmill, that you're lazy, that you're, you know, not getting the most out of life, that you're wasting your time. And you know, I cook loads and I don't use burgers or sausages. You know, I use pulses and vegetables and beans and you know, that's my preferred thing of doing. I'm very aware of the salt content because I'm putting in the salt myself. I'm very aware there's no additives. I really know the nutritional value of what I'm making with vegetables that I've got from a market near me. And I'll say it again, I acknowledge my privilege because my particular life as a poet, which is an unusual one, I'm able to do that whilst I'm trying to think up a rhyme for orange. Like, you know, which is the best red onion for today's bolognese. You know, I can do that. But this is why I say, you know, evolution, that the idea, you know, food, you know, veganism is about so much more than food. Veganism is about so much more than diet. But we all need diet. We all need sustenance. And it's so important, but it's pushed aside in our priorities. We're forced to push it aside. And that's terrible. It's our fuel. It's what makes us. And you know, we need to change our society so we get to spend more time cooking, so that we're not scurrying around the supermarket going, oh, is this a sausage? I don't know. What is Gary? I don't know. I'm just buy anything. Oh, just go to McDonald's. You know, we need to change, Ant. We need to change.
That was outstanding. I really enjoyed that conversation, and we should have an episode of Vegan Talk in the future where we're talking about the grind and capitalism and how it can work for and against veganism. That would be an interesting one, wouldn't it? I wonder whether there's some parallels we can draw. I wonder, Dominic, whether we should bring this conversation to an end now. I'm noticing how long we've been talking. Is there anything else you wanted to say on this?
Oh, Ant, I'm a poet, aren't I? If one thing that poetry is meant to be concise, poetry like haiku, three lines. Nah, modern poet, give me 3 hours and I still won't get to the point, yeah. You know. So, yeah, I think it's been really fun talking about all of this. I've really enjoyed it. So, yeah, thank you for having me on. I know that listeners are welcome to share their thoughts as well. That's always cool, isn't it? We've got our email address, enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com. So please do comment on the main story or any of the other stories that we've talked about during the show.
Absolutely. And yeah, thank you everyone for listening, whether it's been your first time or 45th time. It's really, really lovely to see. I'm now at the stage where I am not checking those metrics every week to see how many people who have downloaded. However, when I do look, it's lovely to see more and more people listening. So thank you everyone who's been sharing it and checking out previous conversations we've had. It's really lovely to see that you think what we're doing is of value. So that's really lovely. If you are new to the show, you might not know that we've got other shows out there. So this is our weekly Vegan Week show, where we look at the news and comment on it. We've also got our weekly Vegan Talk discussion show that comes out on Thursdays. We've got probably half a dozen of those in the back catalogue. And there's 10 episodes of the Going Vegan show that we did right through January. Is it the first one has got the Mr. Dominic Berry on it, talking about people's vegan journey. So what led them to veganism, what that transition was like, and those first few years. There's 10 brilliant episodes of that up there. It's all on the same feed. So go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. They're all on the same Enough of the Falafel feed, so you'll get them there.
Good times. And I'm going to be with you on Vegan Talk on the next episode. We're going to be having a chat about the power of the arts. I'm going to share some of my own poetry,
yes,
and in a wider sense, have a little bit of a discussion about how animal advocating can really be powerfully expressed through art. So I've got one or two opinions on that, but I'll be very, very happy to share.
It would be very odd if you didn't have any, you were just ambivalent about it. You were just like, I don't know, really. I don't really think it makes a difference. Yeah. No, that's going to be a cracking conversation. Set your alarms for Thursday morning, everybody, when that one is ready to hear.
Anyway, that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I have been Dominic.
And I have been Anthony, and you have been listening to episode 45 of Vegan Week.
This show is kindly sponsored by our friends at Fire and Flow Coffee Roasters. And they're such great people. They're offering all Enough of the Falafel listeners a cheeky 10% off orders on their online store when using the code FALAFEL10. That's Falafel, the number 10. Fire and Flow, a specialty coffee roastery based in the Cotswold with a fully vegan coffee shop on site.
Yeah, they're a vegan founded company too. They're run by three friends, Shah, Callum and Phil, and they specialise in roasting and supplying wholesale coffee beans to coffee shops, restaurants, hotels and offices.
For the wholesale part of their operations, they work with other businesses to help them get the most out of their coffee offering, with free barista training and full technical support included.
The products themselves are the result of their passion for working with skilled and ethical-minded farmers who produce the highest quality beans. Fire and Flow then roast them to perfection in small batches at their roastery in Cirencester, which you can visit at any time. Book onto one of their barista courses or roastery tours via their website, fireandflowcoffee.co.uk.
While you're there, you can check out the beautiful, fully vegan coffee shop on site. I've been there myself. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's open 7 days a week from 9 till 3. The last time I went, it was a Sunday afternoon. It was glorious. It's just a fab place to hang out and feel good about life.
Give them a follow on Instagram to get the latest at Fire and Flow Coffee. And for those online orders, remember the code exclusively for our brilliant Enough of the Falafel community. That is Falafel 10. 10 is 1 and 0. So Falafel 10.